Thank you. Well, we've been sort of funneling down today, and what I'm going to describe for you is a complementary thing that we did with the health impact assessment that John just described. So John did me a big favor. There's a bunch of things that I don't have to explain to you because you're all experts on it right now. What we did, as you can tell from my title here, is that we used focus groups to help understand some of the other parts of what we were seeing, or the other parts of the people of Galveston. My disclosures, I have no relationships to disclose. This is a very similar slide with John's name switched for mine. Again, this is one of the things that you see is in a health impact assessment in general is that it really is a team effort, and I really do appreciate everybody that contributed here. Everybody had something to do with this particular piece of it. So an overview of health impact assessments, you all have some sense of what we were doing here. The idea is that you provide information on health implications of upcoming decisions as opposed to evaluating things that have already been done. That's one of the key pieces of a health impact assessment. And as John noted, you're also looking for mitigation options for decisions. You're not just looking to point fingers, you're looking to actually provide input. And it does rely on an evidence-based, data-driven approach. So given all that, why do we do any focus groups with this? Part of the issues that we run into when we're looking at a health impact assessment, and that we saw in our particular health impact assessment, is that even good data, when you come in to do one of these things, they're rarely designed for specific needs of the HIA. That data may be unavailable, be badly out of date, or as you sometimes see with things that you might want to approach with focus groups, it just doesn't exist. And in this particular case, in this particular HIA, we were thinking about being inclusive. And I'll get to that in a little later, in a few slides. This is our basic slide on the background of this public housing HIA. The important thing to remember here is that we did this health impact assessment with the idea that we're going to scatter sites. A lot of what we were looking at was people are going to be placed in different parts of Galveston, and we want to understand what that means for health and how we can mitigate issues that might be there, but we also want to understand it a bit from the perspective of the person who's going to be actually occupying the house. So what we tried to do with the focus groups was discuss and address some of these social factors related to health. So if you remember John's indicator list, some of those things were more directly related to sort of what you think of as social factors or social cohesion, and some of them weren't. And also, they're simply a little less direct. And part of what you can't get from some of those is understanding health perceptions, specifically of how people are going to behave in a particular spot. We're doing a health impact assessment on a place. We want to understand how the people in that place are going to react, specifically to being scattered. This is a ground truthing exercise for some of the indicators that we saw. So we're trying to understand whether our proximity to schools and proximity to truck routes and proximity to other things, whether people actually behaved in the way that we thought that they were going to behave. And then we wanted to include the voice of our public housing residents, of the people who would actually potentially be going into some of these houses. We had a community steering committee, but there was no direct input on that steering committee in from the public housing residents. So we wanted to go to them and ask. And then there were a couple of things that we wanted to do with these groups. We wanted to understand, once we picked the sites, and that's part of what we do with the indicators, we want to understand, well, who should we put there? Maybe this is a healthy place and these are the things we need to do to mitigate, but is there something about a family that we need to think about when we put them there? And then the second issue is thinking about if we want to have social services that complement where you place people, what should those social services look like? What should we be thinking about when we're designing them? So the focus groups themselves were designed to have three groups of 6 to 10 people each, and that's pretty much what we got. We had a limited budget and a limited time. If I had an unlimited budget, I would have talked to everybody in Galveston, but I didn't. I'm still trying. We did get lucky in a way. We wanted to try to figure out who we were actually going to talk to. And we had access to a public listing within the island of Galveston of addresses where housing choice vouchers or Section 8 vouchers were in use. What we thought was these are the folks who probably will most closely resemble who we're going to put in scattered places. The problem was we had a list of addresses, and that's it. No emails, no phone. I didn't even know who these people were. So we had that to work with. We decided to hold the group the groups at a well-known community center that was very familiar to most of the folks that we talked to. We provided food, childcare, and a $30 stipend for participating. And to try to mix it up, we held them on a Thursday night, a Friday night, and a Saturday morning, just to see if we could make sure we could include everybody, people who were working, people who work night shifts. We were trying to make sure to get everybody included. The sampling we used for this was interesting, and I have to credit Dr. Prochaska with coming up with a lot of this, and it was very helpful. We chose three neighborhoods with concentrations of housing and choice vouchers on the island. I'll show you on a map in a second. We divided each one of those neighborhoods into quadrants and then randomly assigned ranks to each household within the quadrant. And the point of this was to make sure that we didn't get everybody from one place, from one apartment complex, because obviously that's not, while focus groups aren't meant to be representative of the entire population, that would have really messed us up. So we decided to try to divide this, and it's also important for us because we are looking at things that are about location. So having a scattered sample within each one of these things is really helpful for us in getting as broad a voice in these focus groups as we can. We visited the addresses. I visited the addresses in rank order, up to 15 per quadrant. And honestly, we were kind of flying by the seat of our pants here because we had no idea how people would respond when I walked up. So I had flyers, I had a spiel, but I have no idea who's going to answer the door. I don't know how they're going to react. I don't know if I'm going to be attacked by a dog on the property. So we tried to design to be as flexible as possible. I tried to recruit people so it was the actual voucher holder that would come, although we were accepting of saying, you know, if you've got somebody else in your family who's above 18 and can represent your household, please come. Check to ensure that the voucher was actually still in use and that I wasn't recruiting somebody who had no idea what I was talking about and didn't care. And actually, in this case, it seemed to help for me to note that while I was recruiting, that they were also going to see me at the head of the table facilitating the focus groups. It was nice when people came in to see familiar faces, both for them and for me. This is a map of what our groups looked like. So the purple, it's sort of group 1, 2, 3, the purple section here was an area of sort of high poverty and high African-American concentration. You can see, if you remember John's map, a lot of that was wiped out by the hurricane. The orange map is one of sort of high to mid-level poverty and a greater concentration of Hispanic folks there. And then the green is sort of a third, a third, a third. It's a little higher income area. So what we were looking at for each one of these focus groups is trying to get a little bit of a different sense and flavor of what the different neighborhoods of Galveston look like. It's also important to note that this is based on the population there. It's not based on who is actually living in Section 8 or Housing Choice Voucher. In Galveston, it's over 90% African American. So you've got a certain type of person who's going to go into the scattered sites, but they're living in very different types of neighborhoods. Conducting the focus groups. So this was fun. That's a very technical term. I love doing focus groups, but one thing that we had to think about in recruiting is, first of all, I had no idea whether anybody was going to show up. And it's very sort of nerve-wracking to stand there on a Thursday night with your food and everything out there, and nobody's going to show up to your party. And fortunately, they did. But what we chose to do was not have a bouncer out front, essentially, and not say, look, sorry, I don't remember talking to you. You can't come in. And for the most part, I sort of analyzed this in the back, and over 90% of the people who came in were actually people that I talked to and recruited, which is good. Everybody that came in had lived in public housing or currently lived in public housing. So it ended up right, but you have to sort of choose when you're doing this. You can't, if you want to be inclusive, and that was one of our goals of this, you have to be careful about how you treat people who come to the door. And then what we started with was a map exercise. So we threw a map up on the wall, and I stood there with green Post-it notes and red Post-it notes and said, you all need to tell me where the healthy parts of Galveston are and where the unhealthy parts of Galveston are. And I just waited for them to go. This is really helpful because it's so open. The first question that everybody asks is, well, what do you mean by healthy? And, of course, you reflect it back and say, you tell me what you mean when we're putting it up there. So we ended up, after about 15 or 20 minutes of this, with a map with all sorts of red and green on it. And the maps were actually surprisingly consistent from between the three groups. And that opened up to a conversation where all I had to do was point to a green place or point to a red place and say, what's going on here? Tell me what the issue is. Tell me about what your health perceptions are here. From there, we were able to focus in more on indicators and say, well, let's talk about food. Let's talk about sidewalks. Let's talk about trucks. And that helped us move down. But I think it wouldn't have been as effective without having this open map exercise at the beginning. And then we gave out the $30 incentive at the end. So we did get some good results from this that you, of course, have to interpret with caution. But we did get some grounding of the ways that we thought about the indicators. And there's some really interesting things that people said, especially about the assumed behaviors that you have in a model versus what you actually hear people saying about how they behave. One of the ones that was really interesting was sidewalks. One of the people in one of the focus groups said, oh yeah, I tell my children to walk on the street. The sidewalks are terrible. And when pressing on that, really, why would you do it? I mean, you know there's cars in the street. And she said, yeah, I think it's more dangerous for them to walk on the sidewalks because where we are, there's people with dogs and they're off leash and I don't know who's going to be hiding behind all of this. You know, part of this makes you sort of think about, well, should sidewalks be our priority? And what other things should we be thinking about when we're looking at some of these indicators? We didn't have access to crime data. So part of what I asked people about was their perception of crime. When you ask people to throw things on a map that are green and red, crime actually is number one. When you ask them about health, when you ask them about anything else, crime comes up as the number one issue. So we had a lot of good discussions about that. When we looked at social networks and social cohesion, things tended to sort of drive down into these two basic, positive social, negative social, and then for each category, they came into these active and passive categories about how they thought about how their social networks and social cohesion were creating health or destroying health. And so you see things, and this is pretty common. You see things, good neighborhoods are neighborhoods where neighbors help neighbors. They know each other. They walk in. They cook each other dinner. They watch each other's houses in a passive sense. And then the negative social indicators are exactly what you'd think, high levels of violence. Not that the people that, at least not that people admitted in the focus groups to actually taking part in, but seeing and violence and drug trafficking. And then the interesting part was looking at negative social indicators that were passive. A lot of people said this just isn't the kind of place where people kind of get out of it. Nobody has any ambition, and nobody really cares. Nobody's really doing anything bad, but there's no role models for kids. And so these are some of the things that we found looking at these focus groups. And then there were a few cross-cutting themes that were interesting from our indicator point of view. One was talking about key places that weren't necessarily schools and things that you get on indicator lists, like the seawall. So what you see here is a picture of of the seawall. This is the southern coast of Galveston, and that's the Pleasure Pier, which was recently built. It's very nice. It's very expensive, and it's a place that attracts a lot of tourists. And the perception, I think, of the seawall for most people around Galveston is the seawall's a healthy place. You can go running. You can play on the beach. You can just sit there and zone out. It's great. That's not necessarily what people in these focus groups thought about. It was much more mixed. And part of it was they were worried about pollution. They were worried about safety. There's all these cars zipping up and down. And then there's this issue of they don't really want my kind there. If we're there, we kind of get run off. And we're there for a little while, and then we kind of move on. So it's suggestive about whether we can include this seawall as something that is really as health-affirming as we think. And then there were a few areas that that I sort of refer to as poisonous high-crime locations. We didn't have any indicator for that, but they clearly came out in the focus group as a place that people wouldn't want to live near, and that they were poisonous in that there was a park right next door, but nobody uses that park because my neighbor got shot there. So that's it's hard. You have to interpret your indicators sometimes with a grain of salt. And then there's the overall theme of losing my island. I think a common theme anywhere where there's tourists and residents. And I put a picture of the pleasure pier on there because this is it's a symbol to a lot of the folks that I talk to of how they are losing their island. That this gigantic thing got developed that's kind of too expensive for any of them to take their kids to. And it's really an indication of the powers that be in Galveston wanting to do something that doesn't involve them and really can't include them. So in this health impact assessment, as I've been talking about, these focus groups can illustrate potential areas of interest or concern and help us interpret. And in specific situations, they can be very helpful, as with family placement in some of these scattered sites. Who do we put there? What questions do we ask of them as we're introducing them? And also, what do you need in support? Part of the thing that was helpful in these focus groups was asking and getting kind of a sense of where we need to go with human capital. And often we sort of see these questions. I saw these questions emerge in the focus groups. How do we deal with younger families and different types of families? And then the limits of this is sort of the standard limits of focus groups. But also, I just didn't get as many young folks in these focus groups as I would have liked, especially because it ended up being a large issue among people who were in the focus groups, is how do we deal with young families who look like me on the island, that there's no support for them, that there's no reason to be there. And we did have a young couple that came who said, yeah, I mean, you know, my people are gone. I don't know what to do. And people like me just don't stay here. How do we account for that when we're trying to place families and think about social services? Focus groups are always a little bit difficult. If you have a good focus group, you feel like there was something that kind of went wrong. They're hard. It's hard to get a full conversation. And the two main things that come out is often you get sort of informal leaders that come out in the focus groups, and they tend to dominate the conversation. So I was using the full suite of ways to kind of shut people up and get other people to talk. And it did work, and people do pick up on it. And it was also very easy to leave health as a topic. Once you say what makes a place healthy, and someone starts talking about crime, then you're on to crime, and you have to be very careful about whether to corral the conversation in and potentially miss good information, or just let them go. And it was impossible to ground to truth all of our indicators. We had 16 indicators, and the choice here really was between whether we want to have an open, sort of organic conversation that really represents perceptions, or sort of narrowly go through all of our indicators. And it ended up being kind of a mishmash of both. And that's just what we chose to do with these focus groups in the place that they had. And so a few of the lessons that came out of this is that if you incorporate this kind of thing into your design early, you can use it in many different ways. Now, we chose to use it later to ground sort of our earlier data collection, but you can also use this earlier. You could see just as easily as we could gone out and done these focus groups or some sort of survey beforehand and then sort of back developed some of our indicators or looked at some things that we wouldn't have thought of before. And then particularly with Galveston, particularly with focus groups, you find some things that are interesting but not relevant, some that are interesting and relevant, and hopefully those go into our reports. And then some things are interesting, relevant, and just maybe need to be toned down. there's a lot of things that happen in all small towns where you need to be careful about what you say. But you also need to be careful with health impact assessments because they're meant to do many things. And part of what our health impact assessment was meant to do was get people in the community talking to one another. And if part of that conversation interjects wounds that have been 50 years old and still aren't cured, but people are working on, then you have to be really careful about whether you actually introduce those or not. So that is, that's all I have, and I hope this has been a bit helpful, and I'll leave this up because I think it's question time. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we just have a short time for questions, and so we'll try to get everybody back to again, and then
rebuilding, they're actually abandoning. And so I was wondering how Anybody have a closing remark that I want to make? Or any other